Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
So the TV stations, Conor, have announced all the matches. TG Cahir have announced 25 matches between or the start of the league and the end of the league. Ayr have announced their matches. They're starting next Saturday on May the 8th with Limerick Tip, and RT are showing three leagues. League games. As far as I'm concerned, Conor, there's too many. I don't know which ones to pick. I'm a little bit frustrated about that. And with two children in the house, there's no way I can watch three matches on Saturday and three matches on Sunday. I understand this is a first world problem and nobody's going to feel in any way bad for me, but I'm going to whinge about it a little bit anyway.
This is the epitome of a first world problem as far as GA is concerned. Like, I saw the games announced yesterday and the first thing I saw afterwards was your tweet not happy about it. Like, we've no GA for how long? No GA matches for how long? And now we've loads of it and you're still giving up. But no, you're right. It is a lot. I was looking at 22nd of May there stood out for me. It's where I picked out the Mayo match, and Westmeath are playing Mayo on that day at 3. Then you've Donegal Monaghan at 5, Armagh Tyrone at 7. Like, that's a solid, what, you're talking 6?
Like, there's none of them you can rule out, really. Like, I mean, that's the point I'm making. That's your whole day Saturday. Like, I'll be kicked out of the house.
Yeah, well, same as. I have two kids at home here, Willie, as well. There's not a chance I'll get 6 hours solid. It'll be a thing of picking and choosing for me well in advance, I'd imagine. I'll be earmarking that 3 p.m. spot on 22nd of May already. So, but like, listen here, Willie, like, not everybody has two kids and some people have free Saturdays.
Yeah, that's true.
You can spend 6 hours on the couch. So, you know, good luck to them.
Yeah, look, it's a stupid complaint really for me. But listen, all I am is this fear of missing out. That's what my problem is. So I pick a match and it's the worst match of the day, and the other one is a fantastic match, and I'm kicking myself. That's what's kind of frustrating me, because there's nothing worse than being out doing something and flicking through Twitter. Oh my God, this is the greatest game we've ever seen. While I wait for this dull, crappy game later on at 7 o'clock, that's kind of what gets on my nerves. The hurling show is starting not this weekend, obviously the following weekend. So our hurling show, we might as well tell you, is back next Thursday. So we're splitting out the shows. This is the last show of just myself and Conor, the general show. We're going football show the following week then. So next Thursday is the hurling show on its own. And we have Paul Ryan and Paddy Stapleton going to do that show. And on the Monday review hurling show, we have Paul Murphy and we have Ken McGrath. Paul Murphy and Paul Ryan are going to be in the studio. I'm going back up to the studio. It's all very exciting. It feels, Conor, like there's some sort of light at the end of this bloody poxy tunnel.
all this positivity, Willie. You know, it's brilliant, isn't it? Like, and especially on the back of your tweet about the matches yesterday. But can you just clarify for everybody, Willie, that you Paddy Stapleton will be on the show? Because I think you might have said something about resigned Paddy Stapleton yesterday. And yeah, some people thought that Paddy, poor Paddy, had done something wrong and where he was going. But you meant re-signed and not resigned.
I re-signed Paddy. Yeah, that's it. I got Paddy on a very reasonable transfer. There's no problem. He's back in. I wrote resigned. All right. I understand that. The return for the clubs, Connor, this is where I'm going to start giving out a little bit. So the 10th of May, they're allowed back training. And matches can't resume until the 7th of June. So, look, I don't know why we have to wait that long for some matches. But look, I suppose on the positive side of it, at least they know now what it is. The 10th of May isn't that far away, 2 weeks away probably. You know, what my big thing is, like, these are kind of arbitrary dates. So on the 10th of May, this is the way I look at it, Connor, without going too much into it now, because you understand people listen to the show to get away from this crap. But say we've been hovering around the 300, 400 cases for the last month, for example. So we'll probably hover around that now until the 10th of May. So what's the difference between today and the 10th of May?
Well, is it not to give, like, I know GAA clubs will have been, you know, and sports clubs will be planning this for a long time, and they could probably say we're good to go tomorrow, especially with the GAA, because underage training has already resumed. But
yeah, we did it all last year.
Yeah. Well, no, I assume that might have, I don't know why, Willie. Like, as you said, it's an arbitrary date. Like, there's not going to be a whole lot of change in the public health situation between now and then. So, yeah. So I'm not entirely sure. What, just one thing I would ask is that, like, I imagine the why can't matches resume earlier, but, like, surely you have to give, you know, players time to get back into actual collective training before you're ready to throw them back into matches, no?
Ah, yeah. Well, like, what I'm talking about, the training should resume today.
Oh, sorry.
Then you're bringing the matches back. I do wonder, like, we obviously know you'd probably need the month to get some way fit for the matches. Like, I mean, we kind of agreed on that. I don't know. Like, I mean, we'll see how it goes. At least it's set now and we know what we're working towards. You can be as frustrated or as happy about that as whatever kind of way you stand on that kind of thing. Good news for people in Mayo is Aidan O'Shea is okay, Connor. So the scan or whatever showed up no ligament damage to his knee. So he can resume that kind of man of steel, never missed a game since 2012 kind of reputation that he has that I wasn't aware of until you said it last week.
Yeah, I think it was 58 championship matches and I imagine the bulk of the league matches that Mayo have had in between as well, which is some going, as we said last week, given his position and given the amount of treatment he takes. But just shows you as well that, like, you know, this sprung up last week and immediately people thought it was cruciate and he might be gone for a year. Then, it, you know, then the talk down here was more likely medial ligaments that he might be gone for a couple of months. And now there's no damage, seems to be no damage whatsoever. And he could be back. He looks like he's going to be back for the league. So, but, like, big sigh of relief from me, Willie, and from many in Mayo as well. And didn't want to envisage the thought of Aidan being missing for the season. And when I was kind of weighing it up then, like, with the league and championship, Mayo were looking at probably a maximum, I think, of 9 games. So even if Aidan was to have missed a few of the league games, there's not that many, so you don't want to be playing catch-up. So, you know, to hear that he's going to be around for some of the league and in the championship, providing nothing happens in between, is, it's brilliant to hear.
Yeah, some bad news for our Maz. It looks like Jamie Clark is not going to commit to this year. I love Jamie Clark. He's like a bit like myself, a year on, a year off, kind of the way kind of I used to go. Like, Jesus, that was too much last year. I need a year off this stuff. And Jamie Clark, he's currently in Paris. He came back last year, obviously played 2021. The current game doesn't suit Jamie Clark. It just doesn't. Like, he's such a brilliant player and he's a creative player, not the biggest player in the world, but he's such silky skills. He's just not suited to the modern game at all. He ends up chasing around after his corner back. He's double marked. He doesn't have the strength to kind of win that ball that maybe he needs to. Two lads scrubbing at him. He's a brilliant finisher kind of in around close to goals. And I don't know, I just never really seen him excel in those kind of tight, he's in the wrong province as well, Connor. Like, if the truth be told, if he played with Kildare, for example, he might get a bit more space in Leinster. But, like, I mean, the way the Ulster Championship is, like, can you remember him really standing out too much in the Ulster Championship in recent years?
Well, not in the big games. That's the problem. Like I remember him having some decent games maybe earlier on the championship, and then Donegal last year being the prime example, just no more than a lot of Armagh players. He just wasn't in the game at all that day. You know, Jamie Clark, like Conor McManus, like Michael Murphy, whatever, has had a target on him since he's been whatever age, you know. So, like, when teams are going out to play Armagh, they have a plan in place for Jamie Clark. And in Ulster particularly, that often involves him being double-marked and marked out of the game. Do you know what I mean? So I can nearly understand where he's coming from. You know, he might do a season and then he's like, geez, I can't take that again. And then he goes away for a while and he always picks some nice places to go away to, whether it's Paris or London, New York. Gets the Crawford again, then comes back for a year. And, you know, then decides he maybe wants out again. So what is he, 32 now? I don't know. I see some people maybe saying that's the end of him. But, like, to me, he's not slow, but, like, he's never been that reliant on pace. I don't think, you know, I think Jamie Clark is more a yard ahead of people in his head than he is on the ground. He's such a clever player. So I hope to see him back, because I do really like watching him play. And I really feel for him in those games like Donegal last year when, as you said, the challenges of the modern game kind of go against him.
Yeah, Oisín McConville was talking about him. That's where it kind of came out. Oisín's obviously Cross McGlen, played with Jamie. He was talking at some media day for gambling awareness. He says, I suppose we're not all wired the same way. And he might be looking at some of us who've played for Cross McGlen and Armagh in the past and think there's more to life than that. And I want more of my life. I want more for my life than that. Whereas our thinking was a little bit on the flip side of that. Like, I mean, everybody has a different outlook. Like, I mean, I always remember playing for Laois and leaving for a year and people scratching their head going, why don't you want to do this? And I was like, I just don't. Like, I mean, I don't want to do it with that level of commitment the same as somebody else. And I couldn't understand that, how they couldn't understand me, and they can't understand how I can't really understand them. And I completely relate to Jamie Clark, who doesn't want to go back this year, and he just doesn't want it for his life.
Yeah, no, and that's completely fair. But the only thing I'll say about that, and maybe your situation, Wooly, as well, is that, like, maybe some of the people that don't understand where you're coming from are those that aren't as, you know, if Jamie Clark wants to come back next year, he'd more than likely be welcomed with open arms into the Armagh setup. Whereas, so there might be somebody who's not as secure in their place in the panel. And if they go away for every 2 out of 4 years, you know, some managers like might say, oh, well, listen, you know, how can we can't really rely on this fella. He's not going to be committed for the long haul. What's to say that he's not going to leave again next season? But
yeah,
again, like you just mentioned commitment there. I mean, like, it's on record. I mean, there's been studies into the amount of hours the inter-county players have to commit, and if you've travel commitments in on top of it as well, like that's not for everybody, and it's certainly not for everybody when you have to do it maybe 5 years on the bounce. And before COVID, well, we saw that last year, the amount of players that were leaving, Michael Quinlan, Killian Clark from Cavan, the amount of players that were leaving because they weren't ready to do this, you know, on a consistent basis for so long. So I can, yeah, completely understand where Jamie Clark has come from. He might have had more commitments than you had back in the day, Willie. But I know where he's. I can definitely understand that attitude for sure.
Tomás O'Shea was talking recently about commitment levels. I think it was on the RTÉ GAA podcast. This is not a new topic. Like, I mean, Jesus, when I was in Off the Ball, you were talking about the unrealistic demands being placed on amateur players. And I used to rally against this and rally against this, and I'd be going on big kind of rants about it. It's not fair. And we've said this on the show before. It's not fair because that's not what I wanted, whereas other fellas on the Laois team did want it. So, like, I honestly think these demands, I think that's a really difficult one to get a consensus on, because I'm pretty sure we've even said this recently, Connor, but I'm losing my memory, is that, like, someone who does amateur triathlons might give up their whole life to train for that. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's everybody's individual choice. Loads of GAA players want that ultra professional environment, and they want to tell their friends about how hard it is. Like, I mean, that's what they're proud of, that. Whereas other fellas think, God, this is desperate. I can't last another year. So I don't know how, when people talk about the demands are too high, how do you find something that everybody agrees on?
Yeah. And I mean, like, I think, you know, Tomás O'Shea said something has to give. Well, what gives? I mean, like, you know, this, as you said, people have been banging this drum for a long time. Do you know what I mean? I think, in fairness, just the study that I referenced there, you know, in the last couple of years has maybe shone a brighter light on it. And the withdrawals of a couple of high profile players have maybe, you know, made some people reset and think, actually, I'm not, this isn't
but
for me.
But did they just want to go travelling, I think, when living in these days?
Like, at the moment, there's no real solution bar them making an individual decision to step away. I mean, like, that's, you know, you could try to come to some consensus, you know, about what a maximum output in a week that it should be for an inter-county player. And then inevitably you'll just have, you know, teams and individuals and stuff going above that straight away.
Breaking it, yeah. So it's really impossible.
Yeah, it is important, I still think, Willie, that people draw a light in it, because there's a danger of being sucked into a herd mentality as well, that if you're not, you mightn't be happy, but you don't want to be. You're not comfortable. You're not high profile enough, you know, think that you can step away and maybe, you know, return at some stage, and you just go along with it because you think that that's what you have to do. But in terms of a solution, because it's, you know, because we're talking about 30 fellas in a panel whose attitudes are all different, you know, some are happy doing it, some aren't. It's really hard to get that consensus, as I said, especially when if you said it, some people are likely to go their own way anyway.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I don't see a very easy solution regarding the professionalism. Definitely not. I just see players that think it's too much for them having to step away. And even when they step away, you don't often hear them saying that was too much for me, because there's almost like, oh, look, I've quit because it's too hard. You know, like, I mean, you don't often hear them coming out and saying, they say, I want to go traveling, I want to do something else with my life. But they don't say the demands are too much. You usually hear that from players who retire and coming out of it. And nobody really wants to admit it when they're in there. Maybe there's a signal that you're not able for it.
That's exactly. I'd say, Willie, there's loads of people that are afraid of saying that for that exact reason, and for maybe thinking that, you know, the perception that maybe they might be soft. So, like, yeah. I think you have to be very comfortable in yourself, you know, to be able to take that decision, to be able to say that that's the reason why you're kind of stepping away, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So there's a new strategic group set up. So every GAA president pretty much that starts off, maybe except for that fella from Cavan that thought everything was all rosy in the garden. I can't even remember his name now. He was kind of such an insignificant president. But Larry McCarthy, I have to apologise to Larry McCarthy. I called him Larry Murphy on several occasions last week. Larry McCarthy, the GAA president, he set up this new strategic group, and it's led by Pat Gilroy. Now, it has commenced on this new strategic plan, and they're going to finalise their results in autumn. So it's led by Larry McCarthy, and it's begun an extensive programme of research, and it's going to engage with every level of the association. Do you know this? Like, oh, we want to hear all your, you know, opinions, and we want to. So it's going to be, the strategic group is shaping out the GAA's focus from 2021 until the end of 2026. So we'll get that in the autumn. Now, here's my thing about this. This is the same old stuff. Let's get a committee. Let's talk to the grassroots. Let's talk. Like, I'd love a president like Larry McCarthy to come in, because if I was the president of the GAA, Connor, I would know exactly what needs to be fixed, because it's bloody staring everybody in the face, the big issues. I don't need to talk to Joe Soap in the intermediate club in Roscommon to hear his thoughts. I can use my own brain to say, this is the association, these are the big glaring issues that I see wrong with it. And as a GAA president, I'm going to set up different committees to fix the issues that I see are the burning issues, not to find another consensus, you know, and go through this whole process kind of again. So here's the big issues for me that I think a new president would be coming in to fix. So the shape of the season, obviously that's fixed. In fairness to John Horan, he's pretty much done that. Hopefully we'll get the outcome that we want at the next Congress, and we'll have, you know, that league championship with the provincials before it. And that's fixed, the split season. That was the big, big, big one. And you have to give John Horan credit for pushing that one and fixing that one. He fixed it to the extent that the CPA have, you know, gone. So they've fixed the fixtures. Yep. Now, another big one for me is county board governance. Can this amateur structure of county boards, is that, you know, functionable going forward in a professional era of the GAA? My answer is no. I would immediately set up a committee comprised of the likes of Mossy Quinn, who's marketing manager of Dublin, Ina Martin, who's marketing manager. I'd have the Wexford County Board chairman. His name escapes me now for a second. I'd have John Costello, the Dublin one, and I'd have other County Board chairmen and other financial experts. And I would set that committee up with a view of saying, can we get full-time CEOs in every single county board and marketing county board or marketing professional in the county board? Can we afford it? And what will the result of that going forward until 2026 mean? Will these positions pay for themselves, and will county boards be run in a professional manner? Like, why does Larry McCarthy need to do a strategic review to fix that issue straight away?
He doesn't. Do you know, like, first of all, I got a bit of a shiver there, Willie. You said, if I was president of the GAA, and just the thought of that kind of crossed me for a second.
Yeah, I take offence to that now.
Not at all, I'm not at all.
I'm only joking.
Yeah, but no, so yeah, you had a lot of good points there. I think the main one, I think, and this is off the back of a lot of issues that have kind of arisen in individual counties in recent years, is the governance, and the financial governance in particular. So I think, like, that there are positive steps in a lot of counties, I think, along those lines. Let's say you mentioned Wexford is a shining example. Mayo are definitely starting to get their house in order down here. Dublin obviously have had their house in order for a long time. So individual counties are already taking those steps. So I think the important point that you raised there is about the level of input that would be had at central level in terms of the governance of that. Do you know what I mean?
So if a county board can't afford it, can we give them some assistance with a view of potentially even getting that money back? You know, when these professionals put the structures in place, you know, because obviously that governance, you're right, is linked to the finances, which is a link to another huge issue, which is the cost of inter-county teams.
Yeah, to make it profitable for the pick profitable, or at least efficient, for the county itself, but also to make it profitable and efficient for the association in general. And if you've a committee made up of the type of people you talked about there at central level, kind of managing that, well, then you go a long way to fixing the problem for the association as a whole. But mainly, and I think this is where the problems have arisen, is the situation in individual counties, because you've been blue in the face saying it, Willie, that, like, there's well-meaning and very well-intentioned volunteers working in these positions, but might not necessarily be the most qualified to deal with what has become a behemoth, a monster, in terms of the finances involved at county board level. So if you're right, if I was Larry McCarthy, that would be step number one. And then we go from there.
Exactly. So then, like, the cost of inter-county teams is another big one. It's crippling county boards. Management are asking for a huge backroom teams. They're kind of being led by seeing what Dublin, you know, big, even Mayo, big counties that have big finances, and they're seeing what they're doing, and they want to copy them. And they see that as a route to success. And maybe a full-time CEO would put a stop to that. A professional to tell a county manager, that's not in our budget. Forget about that. Work off the budget I'm giving you. That's it. Sorry. You know, or is there an inter-county spending cap that can be put on teams?
Yes.
I would, if I was Larry McCarthy, I'd set up another committee, look at the cost of inter-county, look at the cost of preparing inter-county teams. Can we do something about that? Can we put a cap? Would that work? Can we pool all sponsorship money? Because Dublin are getting millions every year and Leitrim or Laois might be getting 80,000. Can we do something around that to make it more or fairer for every county country? There's two things.
Right. Yeah, well, just on that one, Willie, here you go. You devise a budget for the running of an inter-county team, for example, right? And then you say, Then you say, you need this for S&C, you need this for physios, you need blah, 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 blah. And then for the counties that aren't in a position to kind of look after that themselves, and like that's exactly the problem. Counties, smaller counties have been chasing the bigger counties for years, trying to catch up when they don't have the means to do so. So you devise a budget at central level for that. And then you say that, like, well, if certain counties aren't in a position, you know, then the assistance comes from central level. And the assistance comes from central level through potentially pooling of a sponsorship and all that sort of stuff. But it shouldn't be the case where a smaller county is trying to do exactly the same as what Dublin are doing, where Dublin are far better positioned and far better financed to be able to do that. And they shouldn't be chasing their tails. Smaller counties shouldn't be chasing their tails and spending beyond their means just to catch up when they just don't have the finances to do that.
Exactly. And the other big one then, the last big one. So we have the shape of the season, which is fixed by John Horan. Grand. We have county board governance. We have cost of inter-county teams, and we have games development money. That is the other big one that needs to be fixed. And I don't need to set up a strategic review committee. I'll set up a committee to see how we can fix this issue. And the elephant in the room is obviously Dublin's dominance. The elephant in the room is the money that they're getting in GAA games development money. And the elephant in the room is, how do we bring up the other counties, you know, and maybe ask Dublin or tell Dublin that you have to, you know, do it yourself instead of saving a million that you can in a year. So, like, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, these are the big ones that you don't need a strategic, you don't need a committee to know this. You're the GAA president. You should be on top of all this way more than me. You should have your own opinion on it. And for me, these are glaring issues. And committees should be set up for all those four glaring issues. The elephant in the room for the whole playing side of the GAA, never mind the kind of governance side of it, is Dublin's dominance. What is going to be done if in a situation Dublin keep winning all Irelands and it turns out something similar, Kerry might stop them every, you know, 3 years or whatever, because they have, you know, their county is just so immersed in GAA and they have very good finances with their sponsorship as well. So how do we get a more equitable championship? You know, like we have the A versus A and B championships now, and that will probably help. But like, I mean, is Pat Gilroy leading this strategic review the right man after his performance on the Sunday game that night, when his kind of solution was, you know, a natural fit, like joining Monaghan and Cavan, who absolutely hate each other just on the basis that some of the players went to DCU together.
And geography. So you may, is Pat Gilroy leading this? Well, like, you know, so I just look through the names that are, like, there's some good names that I would recognise.
It's been shared by Larry. Yeah, it's been shared by Larry McCarthy. You would have thought he was the one that, you know, his name jumped out at me, I suppose. Maybe he's not leading it.
Yeah, I see David Hassan, who I would have heard before, Tim Murphy from Kerry. You know, a couple of names. Obviously, Tom Ryan is there as well. A couple of names that I would recognise. And, like, just on the back of the Sunday game thing, like, Pat Gilroy had some actually interesting points to make in that Sunday game show. He just made a couple of marsways, and the Monaghan and Cavan being the natural fits, just purely based on the fact that a couple of them went to college together in DCU, was one of them. Do you know what I mean? But I think the essence of Pat Gilroy's point, and which is very interesting considering his background, he's come from Dublin, was about population advantage. Do you know what I mean? And basically that, like, if the counties with that advantage get their houses in order, like Dublin have, that their prospects of success are obviously going to improve. So
Connor, but that's perfectly logical. Everybody knows that. And that's the Dubliner. But his solution to it is to join up other counties rather than do anything about the counties that are like Dublin, for example, who've such a big population, who have so many finances. His solution is to uproot every other county in the country and almost create conferences to take on Dublin.
I know.
Rather than the other way around.
Yeah, of course. And like that ignores what you said about the elephant in the room, about the need to sort Dublin out. And maybe like Pat Gilroy should have been looking at that first, as opposed to worrying about whether Monaghan and Cavan are natural fits. But like, I suppose the one thing I'd say in Pat Gilroy's defence there was that he was making that point on a live television show, you know, and maybe like...
Sorry,
Willie. What I mean is that, like, he's on a committee now with, you know, he's on a committee that are, you know, there's 10 people at least, you know, from around the country that are, you know, that are come from, you know, strong GAA backgrounds, strong administrative backgrounds. So the idea that be like Pat Gilroy might have loads of good ideas, but then that they take those good ideas and they develop them into something practical and workable, and not as kind of, you know, kind of just off the cuff or seemingly off the top of his head, like they seem to be expressed on the Sunday game that night. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that, like, you need some sort of radical thinking. Do you know what I mean? Like Pat Gilroy had, but it needs to be like some of the ideas that he put out there were just off the wall. So when you have other good GAA figures from around the country with good backgrounds, that then they work on them and come up with something that's a lot more workable than some of the stuff that he talked about.
Yeah. Okay. So in summary, before we get to Liam Griffin, we're looking at county board governance. I didn't even mention paid managers. Like, I mean, some people have an issue with paid managers. I don't. I think it's an incredibly difficult job. I think they have an awful lot on their plate. And the only problem I would have with paid managers, if county boards that can't afford it are paying the managers, if a private donor is paying a manager, well, good luck to the manager and good luck to the donor. And it doesn't go through county board books. I don't see one issue about that. I say more power to these managers taking money off a man who's more than happy to give it to him, because it's a tough job. The issue with paid managers would probably be, and plenty of presidents have talked about this, but none of them have done anything about it. Like, I mean, and probably because you can hide the payment coming through a donor. But I don't think you should need to hide that. If you have a donor that's willing to pay a manager, I think that should be made public and we know which managers are taking in money and which aren't.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, the famous quote, Willie, was what? That they tried to investigate the payments under the table and they couldn't even find the table. That was about 20 years ago.
Yeah, okay. It's never going to be made public. That was a silly thing for me to say. But at the same time, the paid county managers, as long as county boards aren't paying it, would you have an issue with that?
No, I don't have an issue with inter-county managers being paid, Willie, because I look at a backroom team that are full of professionals that are being paid. And the most important job of it all is the manager, and he's not being paid. I don't necessarily have a problem with managers being paid. I don't know about the fact that, like, is it okay for, you know, Limerick or somewhere, you know, other counties, you know, to happen to have a wealthy donor that can pay a manager. Do you know what I mean? And then other counties next to them don't. And like, would the GAA be comfortable with taking that stance that they're happy for that to happen? Can the GAA as an amateur organization, you know, they've been doing it for years, but like, can they publicly come out and say, we're okay with this? I don't think so. But again, as you said, like if a private donor is willing to cop up the money, and if, you know, I've not necessarily a problem with that. I've a problem with can the GAA haven't been standing by it to date, but can they stand by that? Do you know what I mean? The lack of transparency there is an issue, really.
Yeah. Look, to be honest, paid managers would be way down the list. I don't know if I would even have it on my list. So here's the list that we might put it into a presentation and send it up to Larry Murphy and say, just scrap that. Larry McCarthy, sorry. What is wrong with me? Send it up to Larry McCarthy and say, forget about your strategic review and all the time you're going to waste on it. Set up four committees, one to look at county board governance, one to look at the cost of inter-county teams, potentially capping them, one to look at games development money, and on the playing side, what is going to happen in 10 years' time if Dublin have won 8 of the next 10 All-Irelands. There's your four committees. Forget about your strategic review. I've saved you loads of time and you can send a cheque in the post. Will we leave it on that one, Conor?
Done.
Right. OK, up next, we'll talk to Liam Griffin.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat and have a shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know, it was pure luck now, in fairness. Pure luck. But it's fucking bullshit, as you've seen yourselves.
So the latest Laoghaire Gael of the series is on tonight at 9:30, and it's a good one because it features Wexford's All-Ireland winning manager, Liam Griffin. And Liam joins us on the line now. How's it going, Liam?
Good, Colm. Good, thank you.
I'm surprised it's taken you so long to feature on Laoghaire Gael, Liam.
Well, I'm surprised I'm on it, Colm, to be quite honest with you, because with all due respects, I'm not saying this to be falsely modest. I'm a one in a row All-Ireland winning manager, and I played, and I lost my career, but I never managed to reach the dizzy heights that I had planned to reach. And so, look, I'm actually flattered to be in the company of the people that are on it, and that's the truth. I'm not saying that to be falsely modest.
Okay, that's fair enough. Because, like you mentioned, you didn't reach the heights in your career. You played minor under 21. Then you transferred down to Clare and you played senior intercounty with Clare. I actually wasn't aware of that. So when you went to manage Wexford, you might have been a little bit, you were a pretty low profile choice.
I was, because I'm from a non-hurling club as well, and I won more in football. I won a lot in football, but I played for every Wexford team before my 19th birthday, except for the two senior football and senior hurling team. So I was well able to play, and I was a skillful hurler and I was a good footballer. And I went to the LSL College in Waterford and I captained the Harty Cup team, and you know, I knew I could play, and I had a lot of confidence in my own ability, to be quite honest with you. And I was permanently trying to do planning for games and things all my life. But look, I went to Clare because I was in the hotel school in Shannon, but my father was from Clare as well, and that made it special. But that didn't dawn on me as a youngster, you know, you got picked for Clare, but it was a massive deal for my dad because he used to be always fighting Wexford's case or Clare's case in Wexford at our funerals of relations in Wexford, because my mother's a Wexford woman. So, look, we're steeped in the game, and I was at Munster finals and all sorts of stuff as a child. And so I was steeped in hurling, but my club was mostly football. And I never trained a team to win hurling championships. And I was training a junior B team, I was playing that myself, and Ross there when I was trying to invent hurling in it. And my time was mostly in football, to be quite honest with you. And I played football for Clare as well. I didn't play senior for him, but I played football for Clare as well under 21 and got to Munster final. So, look, I was involved across two counties. Coincidentally, that my father was from there. But I wound up in a great club in Clare, and that was fantastic. I played for Newmarket and Ferguson. I never had beaten, and I'd beaten team with them. So I have a lot of hurling done, but I was gone by the time before my 21st birthday, because I was gone to Switzerland.
You were gone to Switzerland with the career, with the course you were doing for the hotels, hotel management.
Yeah,
was it?
No. What happened was when I was in school, in college, in secondary school, like my parents, my dad was a guard and retired early, and my mother was a really great woman, really an entrepreneur, and she did a lot of great work, and they bought a small falling down hotel, and my mother used to run a guest house, so we were steeped in that as well. So I like that business, but that it's not a business for a fellow who wants to play in sport, to be quite honest. No. And it was golf or something. No, it's not a career for sport.
Well, you must have really loved it, Liam, because, like, I mean, you kind of walked away from the inter-county scene with Clare, you know, for your career, which we in this day and age, we're almost seeing the opposite.
Yeah, I know. Look, I was in the hotel school in Shannon, and the Clare selectors had arranged that I finished my training in the old ground hotel in Ennis. But my mother and the man over the hotel college was a Swiss man. But my mother actually sat me down and said, listen, Liam, you know, I know you love your hurling. We love watching you play and all of that. But, you know, you need a career, and hurling, it'll be wanted as long as you can play. But when you can't play anymore, you won't be wanted anymore. So you need to think for longer than that. Now, I was prepared to stay and go to the old ground. But my mother didn't want it. And I had great respect for her and what she'd done for us as a family, because it wasn't easy wearing four young lads and putting them through a boarding school and doing all of those things. And my dad was a great man and worked so hard in the way as well in the business. So I felt a kind of an obligation to them, which is not a great way of joining the business. But I also loved that business anyway. I loved that business anyway. So look, but I came back and I played for Wexford again. I wasn't even fit in playing for Wexford. I played in the Wexford Hunting National League. I played in the Rockets final. But my dad was still alive, and that's the only reason I played. And other than that, when he died, Lord have mercy on him, I was gone. So because I couldn't do both. It was just crazy. Work until 2 in the morning, get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, work till 12, go down to Wexford, play a match, and be back on duty again at 6 o'clock that evening, you know. So yeah. It was just impossible. Impossible. Just too much.
You couldn't do it. So, like, I mean, you get the Wexford senior job. You were going for the minor job because you had been with a lot of underage teams, you know, in Rosslare, and you probably would have known a lot of the players coming through. You wanted the minor job. You went for the minor job. You couldn't get it. You got the senior job, amazingly.
But what happened with the minor job was I was coaching kids, because I was coming back from Croke Park being totally frustrated watching Wexford play. And I had grown up in the Rackard era, and I'd grown up in Ned Wheeler, myself, were great friends. It was Billy Rackard lived close to me, were great friends. And I respected that team. That was an incredible team. I mean, they were trailblazers in hurling. They came out of nowhere. So, like, from the time I was 5 till I was 19, I think Wexford, 18, Wexford contested nearly half of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Finals. Now, we won 3, but there was, you know, won 55, 56, 60, and 68. But I grew up and Wexford was on fire for all of that time, because hurling was such, it was the World Cup in rugby, it was the World Cup in soccer, it was the World Cup in baseball, football, hurling. It was the entire gamut of all of those World Cups. That's what it felt like to be a Wexford man at that stage. Like, I remember walking to De La Salle College, and we'd won the All-Ireland the day before with a hurling in my hand, thinking, I tell you one thing, I'll show you boys a few things. That was my kind of taking it, because I was cocky and fierce and proud of Wexford, and I had 2 puzzles on the team. And look, it was just such a magical time in Wexford. So I was inoculated with that. And it's a kind of a passion that never, ever left me. I just love and adore for hurling. And I love football as well, to be honest, because I played a lot of football and won a couple of Munster championships, beaten in Ireland semi-finals and senior football colleges. So look, I loved them both, and I loved them to a point of obsession, to be honest.
You haven't seen the show yet, but you admitted on the show that your first meeting with the team didn't go down too well, which I'm surprised about, because you're a very charismatic talker, and maybe you became that after the All-Ireland win. I don't know. George O'Connor gave you a 1 out of 10 for your performance in that first meeting with the senior team.
I was lucky to get the one. Yeah, but you see, George is a complex character, and so was John. And these fellas were beaten to death by matches. And George was getting old, and he'd heard it all before. This was another bullshitter coming in here again, type of thing. That was kind of attitude, perhaps. But my point was, I don't care what he says. The first thing I had on the board was honesty. And I made the point at that meeting, which I think was a good point to make. You will never have any trouble with me as a manager. All you need to do is four or five of you get together and tell me you don't want me. And I'm out the door like a bullet. There'll be no need to go to the county board. You tell me when you want me to go. Don't tell anybody else. When you want me to go, you just stand up and tell me and I'll go. That's what honesty is about. And I'll do the same with you. And let's try and see, can we get together? But they were totally underwhelmed. But why wouldn't they? I was from Rosslare. Rosslare didn't even have a hurling team at the time. So, but I wasn't lacking confidence myself, to be honest, if that sounds cocky. But I was coming back from matches, watching Wexford lose matches that I felt we could have won. So from my perspective, I was working in my head things to do. But one thing I did say to myself, I was in a pub in Ashford in Wicklow, where people used to go on the way back from Dublin. And I was sick and tired going in there listening to Wexford and just bleating and going on about this and that and the other. And I just made the point to myself, look, at going home in the car, I'd nearly get under the bed when Wexford would lose in a big match like that. And I remember saying in the car going home, I'm going to do something about this. And I'm going to start hurling in my own club. Because we'd won junior football and I'd come back from being away and I was put in charge of the team and asked to do it. And we hadn't won anything since 1896 or something when Wexford Rosslare won the first ever county championship. But when I came back, I actually started with youngsters in my own field. So I said, if I want to do something, it's up to me to come and to rail a few guys for Wexford hurling. And two guys won an All-Ireland medal that day on that field from my club originally. They transferred away from us, which was a disaster from our perspective. We never got over it. And that was the two guineas, but they were the first in the field with me that time. And I mean, that proved the point that if you wanted to go working with kids, you can actually rear a child for Wexford hurling. And that's why I wanted minor, and I wanted it for 4 to 5 years. And I guarantee I was going to get 5 players every year that would be fit to play senior hurling. And I put everything I could into it. I didn't want a senior job. I didn't want to be manager anyway. I wanted to be playing all my life. I didn't want to be a manager. And I'd never envisioned playing against the wall that I was going to be a manager. I just said, you must be goddamn joking. I want to play. I don't want to be a manager. I want to be on the team. So from my perspective, I didn't get the minor job. I was beaten by a good friend of mine. I wouldn't canvass. I was never going to canvass for any job in Wexford if they wanted me. And I'd do it, but I was never going to ask anyone for a vote. That's entirely up to them. And that's exactly what happened with the minor. I couldn't get the job. I tried a few times. And even after he won the All-Ireland, I couldn't get it either. So that was just the way it was. And then I was asked to do a senior, and I don't think there's anybody left in the country or Europe was prepared to do it, I think. I'm not sure. They never told me the truth anyway.
I think
they knew how to twist my cards with the cook fellas that I hurled with in there, John Quigley and fellas like that, and that I was friendly with, and Joe Shocknessy. And when I said, no, I'm not doing it, they said, that's okay, we'll go for an outsider. And of course, they knew that was going to make me probably crack up. So anyway, that's how we wound up in the senior job. I wasn't Jose Marino, not that he's spent force as well, or any of those people. I was just a regular guy with a big interest, and that's what happened.
And come here, have you changed your mind since the Leinster win under Davy about the outside managers in Wexford?
No, I think that Davy did a great job for Wexford. I have to be honest and say he did a great job for Wexford. He got ourselves into the second division, which was absolutely vital to be playing at the top level. Your entry level is where you're going to wind up. That's it. I mean, if you want to talk about bringing guys in to play second division hurling, they're going to struggle to get to the top because their entry level is keeping at a certain point. So we needed to be in the top, and Davy did that. That was his biggest achievement, winning Leinster. But what I would say is that it's shameful that Wexford can't find a manager. Like, we had a great tradition, like. So why shouldn't we be able to rear our own manager and then get out there and do it? Why not, like? Why do we have to go for outside? And that's no disrespect whatsoever to Davy. Now, they have a big entourage as well of people with them as well. But, like, there's very few Wexford people. There are some Wexford people in it. So really, like, Davy has to trust his own panel. And I respect that, and that's okay. But we need Wexford people heavily involved in that game so that we can, look, there's no outsider going to get under the bed when we lose, but that's the kind of feeling you have to have. You have to feel the pain. And I know that Davy probably feels the pain. I'm not suggesting he doesn't. But the real pain is when you have that purple and gold running through your veins, or blue and white, or whatever you have. And it has to hurt the management as well. And I remember they brought in an outside manager of Wexford, and it was appalling what happened. He came in and they lost the match in Leinster semi-final or final. And he never went into the dressing room afterwards. He just went and discussed. In other words, you're losers, and that's it. And that was when I heard that, I thought, bloody hell, we're really degrading ourselves then doing things like that. And that's just my feeling. I think we should be able to bring our own people to manage hurling teams.
Yeah.
And football teams, for that matter.
I'm laughing at the George O'Connor, just to go back to it, to 1 out of 10, because you gave us a speech before, Liam. I'm not sure if you remember. It was in the Montague Hotel, and it was in the late 90s. You'd won the All-Ireland. And over 20 years later, I still remember it. And I'll just let the listeners fill them in on a little bit of the theme of your speech. From my memory, was the commitment level that's needed to win an All-Ireland. And you were up on the stage, and you were very funny, and you gave a great speech, and you ended up telling us about this athlete that trained every day, maybe sometimes twice a day, watched what they ate, and you laid out this week of commitment for this athlete, and you made us guess what sport was this athlete playing. So I can't remember thinking it was a boxer or whatever it was anyways, and it was a contestant on Gladiators, and you said, fucking Gladiators, lads. He said, if that's what they're doing, what do you think you need to do to win an All-Ireland? And I just thought it was brilliant. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, no, I remember that now. Yeah, I do remember it. Yeah, I do, because I was reading this thinking, holy shit, this is what's going on. You know, and we were talking about two laps of the field, and then we're all tired. Well, anyway.
But that's what I mean. Like, I remember that 20 years later, and it's just the way you were able to get your point across. And, like, I mean, you had to turn Wexford. Wexford had lost a league title in 91, a league title in 93, Leinster finals in 92, 93, 94. As Liam Dunn admitted on the show that'll be on tonight, he said that he admitted they were losers.
Yes, but I didn't think they needed to be losers, okay? So I also, what I did with there, and when I say I mean we, I picked a very good management team. I had two of those fellows with me. They had to have been involved in underage, or I didn't want them with me. That's the fact. Because I think there's an empathy that fellows have that train kids, and an understanding of what you can do with a player that, you know, you just don't walk into a field and they, you know, with all just adults, because you assume that they do this. But I think that assumption is not necessarily correct. And my point was, I was managing Ross Lair teams as underage kids, and I know it sounds a bit stupid to anybody listening, of 12 years. We won a county final, we beat Buffers Alley. That, to me, was one of the greatest days of my life, that we could beat Buffers Alley in under 12 hurling, because they would have laughed at people like us. Who the hell are Ross Lair? Like, they're nobodies. Yeah. And we won a county final, and we won it strategically with an under 12 team, which is absolutely sound stat. It was the way we picked the team that we were able to manage, that we could control the game. We won it. Now, that's just the way it is. Well, what I'm saying is, you have to, the adult player, I was childish in my attitude as an adult player. And, like, if you're childlike and you can actually get down to basics and explain as if it was a child, even though it's a man you're talking to, and even though it's a man that might have played a lot of sport, like, they can empathise with something if you're trying to explain at that level why we need to do it. So what we did was we broke down the game of hurling. And I picked Seamus Barron from Knockmuir, who I played for Wexford with, and I loved the guy, because when I went into Wexford team, you know, we were all shy when you walk into a dressing room. I was a complete outsider coming in from Ross Lair. Who's your man like? You know, so an escape even someplace. So Seamus was friendly with me when I sat down. Friends wouldn't even talk. We never introduced ourselves to each other. Just not the way we were. We were country guys, and that's what happened. And, you know, it was totally different to colleges, where we had a great setup in LSL. But Seamus was a grand guy, and I met him at underage teams, and he was very committed to underage. Rory Kinst had a fantastic record in FCGM, but Claude, he played for Wexford. He was great with youngsters, and he was with us. And there were three of us together were the main management team of the team. And we had a tight-knit group, and Seamus got sick, but we wanted no replacement. We were going to wait for him to come back, and I'm so glad and pleased that we did. So that was absolutely important, and they were on the same wavelength as me, and we had lots of meetings about what was going to happen before we got up to say it. Some of them, the boys were saying, Jesus, I don't know whether we're going the right way here, and we might be laughed at. They say, look, I don't care if I'm laughed at. The bottom line is, we're going to get the message through. Like, and that's, anyway, so we built it on that. So what we did was we broke down the game, and this was going through my head all of the time anyway, when I was coming back from those losing matches. What could I do what would I do if I could do something different? And there was good managers there, but there was things that you're looking at kind of objectively from the stand, saying, well, I could get this right, I could get that right. So we analysed the whole game, and we broke it all down, and we went through everything. And my point was, okay, I just want to ask you a straight question. This is when they got into it. After a while, they got into it. In the end, they used to getting pissed off with the meetings that I was having. And eventually, then I used to have to call the guillotine on it myself and say, no more, 5 more minutes and we're gone. No, we need another 10 minutes. No? So anyway, but we broke down what we needed to do. But my point when the challenge was, this is what constitutes a game of hurling, and call it out. And funnily enough, we kept writing them down. And then, well, we hadn't got the skill till about 12 or 13. So I was saying, right, why can't we be tops at all of those things where we're deficient, maybe. We know we're not as good as Kilkenny. We just absolutely know that. And we're not, but we could be if we got a lot of other things right. So we analysed it all down along the line and said, right, we can be the fittest team in Ireland. Why can't we be the fittest team in Ireland? And we don't need to kill you. And if it's not fun, don't even bother your ass coming in. Because if it's not fun, I want fun. I want to see plenty of laughing, joking and carry on all the time. But when we're serious, and that's it. And we went down to the various bits and pieces. Could we be the best blockers and hookers in the game? And I had that for a reason, because I was going to do analysis on the games. If you want to do analysis on a game of hurling, how do you know how competitive you are? There are ways to find out how competitive you are. It all seems simple now, but at that time wasn't enough. So we broke it all down and said, well, we can do this, 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 and this. And if we do that, what percentage is that going to give us over and above what we were doing already? So, you know, someone, you know, when I asked how much do we need to improve, someone said, oh, 50%. And then someone else said, oh, Jesus, 50. You want to go 100? Okay. And I said, suppose I said 25% was enough, what would you say? You know, that's all. Yeah. You're not crossing the line that's that massive. So suppose you're 25% better. So then we implored, we said, why can't we be disciplined? Why do we give a fella in a game of hurling a ball at 40 yards out and say, right, put that over the bar and expect him not to do it? You know he's going to do it. So what I used to do with training was put the ball down for the puck out when there was a stupid foul game. Right? Say, okay, throw the whistle. That's where that's coming next, okay? That's coming up into this zone now from that stupid foul of just pulling a jersey or doing whatever. You've got to be disciplined. And discipline means then you'll focus on the ball. Because you're not going to, like, how many times do you see young lads under 12 pulling fellas' jerseys going by him? And no one ever says, you know, stop it. He's a right chap because he didn't let him get through. So look, I've been boring you now, but all of those detail that we could work on, because we knew we weren't the best hurling team in Ireland. We absolutely knew it, but we knew we could be, and we knew that we could win All Ireland if we did it. But we never even spoke about All Ireland. We just talked every game at a time, and that was it.
When you mentioned counting the hooks and blocks and stuff like that, because George O'Connor again mentioned you were talking about stats in the first meeting, and that would have been way ahead of your time, Liam, you know, doing things like that, making sure we can be the best hookers and blockers. Like, I remember it wasn't until 2003-04 when we started talking about, you know, forwards tackling or, you know, counting how many blocks we get in. That was definitely before I remember ever speaking about it in a dressing room.
Yeah, well, the point is, I was doing that now in school. Like, I used to sit in the study hall in De La Salle College in Waterford, and I'd pick the Ulster hurling team for you, and I'd pick the Ulster football team as well, and the Connacht football team, and I could tell you Paddy McGarrity from Leitrim was a great hurler, and I was obsessed with the goddamn game, and I was obsessed with how to play the game as well. And I was training the field, and fellas would be screaming and roaring in the dressing room, and they'd be talking about everything, and I just think, let us out, for Jesus' sake, let us out, like, and say, there wasn't any strategy or things like that. Not that, you know, the game, you can have a strategy. But people would think, oh, you can't have a strategy for hurling. Throw the ball in and let him off. You know what I mean? Or as Christy Ring famously said, throw the ball in and ref and get out of the way. That type of attitude. Yes, you can be strategic in hurling. But I tell you, if you want to have good defenders, they've got to have a different attitude than just the last port of call is a foul and I can do it and it's no problem. It is a problem. Yeah. You can't do it. And you can't do it in hurling because that man's going to put that ball over the bar, okay? And you want to keep persisting in that, we're not going to win anything. And I was able to give them stats of previous matches because I got them out. And say, right, this is how many times you fouled. This is how many points defenders are getting off of you. So we're able to say before a match, right, they're free taker so-and-so, so-and-so. If he gets more than 6 points, you're going to get beaten. Now, I'm saying this, and I'm not saying this to be boastful. And I don't want to, it was just pure logic. I looked at Gary Kirby's stats in the Ireland final before that, and I looked through all of the detail. And I just said, if Gary Kirby gets 4 points or more, we more than likely will not win in All-Ireland. He got 2 points from freeze, and we won by 2 points. Now, yeah. Is that somehow that fella's a genius? I am in me arse. I just did an analysis and just looked at it and thought, that's not going to work. If we let him have 6 and 7 points, we're going to be out the gate. That's a fact.
But it must have been incredibly satisfying, wasn't it? In the second half, you gave away no free.
We gave no free away in the second half. Now, I felt sorry for Limerick because they got pilloried over that. And there were some mentions about the... Because I would have liked to see Limerick win, but I didn't want to see him beating us. But like from our perspective, right, okay, they were saying that couldn't be possible. But they didn't realise that was our game plan. And we had a man put off before half-time, don't forget. And yeah. We're in the dressing room. I only used to concentrate on three things. If you're going any more than three things, you're going to fry your fellow's brain. He doesn't want to hear 5 and 6 and 14 things. He doesn't want to hear all that stuff. You might have an individual come with a fellow on his own and say, listen, you're going well. You need to settle down a bit more. You need to attack the ball a bit more because you're coming in too late and whatever, whatever. But anyway, so we would have tried very, very hard to get that discipline right. Now, we didn't foul the second half of the Leinster final either. No one copped that. Now, we were practicing this, but what we used to do was we used to have the analysis up on a board for every training session. And this man, he's a solicitor in Wexford. He's a mad hurling. He's worse than myself. A fellow called John O'Leary. His two big hobbies are hurling and opera. So there's a queer one for an Irish fella. But anyway, that's what he does. But he used to do the analysis, and he'd have them out by fax to me first thing of a Monday morning. And by the way, when I got to read those, I could actually then go through every move in the game, and I could see it again in my head, because I didn't need to be packing my head with that kind of stuff on the sideline. So by getting that the next day, I could see and I could analyse it, and it could actually lead to where the others got scores because of some of the things that happened. So when you get used to it, it's a very good. There's so many stuff out there now that I think it's overanalyzed, and we only had 6 points. That's it, no more. We knew that would give us a good feel of the game. So by doing that, and by making that work, we got used to it. And then we had a big powwow after every game. And there's an interesting statistic. In every game we fouled the most, we lost. In every game we fouled the least, we won. Doesn't matter who they were, second divisions or first divisions. When we fouled the most, we lost. We didn't foul, except for one aberration of that. So we knew that if we didn't foul. But in the Ireland final, we Damon Scallon put off. And my point was, if you go out there to try and take revenge for anything like this, this is the time that we were now half an hour away from bringing home a McCarthy Cup. And I'm just saying to you, if you want to go out there now and lose your discipline, forget the people. This is the place that will be full of seagulls in an hour and a half's time. Okay? And they'll be picking up all the stuff off the stands. And now, this is where we are. And it's now to us to get the concentration right. No fouling. No fouling. No fouling. Okay? And that's it. You cannot foul, because if you do, you're going to get beaten. Okay? Do you understand that? Now, that's the point you need to remember. It's not all about discipline, but we've practiced the discipline. We've been doing the discipline. We've been doing it for the last couple of years. We know what it means. We know what it means. So now go out there and show us we can do it. And we can do it that way. And you can do it now. We can do it. And then we had a plan for the extra man, because we thought about it. So, look, this is not genius stuff. This has been dedicated to the job you're supposed to do and trying to make it happen. That's it. And by the way, I want to tell you, managers don't win matches, because managers are all over papers and they get a lot of credits for everything. But managers don't win matches. They can help a player team to win a match, and they can help players to be the best they can be, but they don't win matches. They're not on the field. The team have to be good enough to win the matches. And if they're not good enough, they won't win All Ireland. They've got to be good enough, but there's ways to make them better. And that's the fact, that they have got the skills, but they use them in the right way.
You brought in a sports psychologist in 1996 as well, which would have been way before its time. Niamh Fitzpatrick was your name. And sometimes I wonder, back in the 90s, the sports psychology was completely taboo altogether. You'd have lads sniggering and laughing and everything. You said Niamh Fitzpatrick was very good. But I think from looking at the show and from reading about you, you were pretty good at the bit of sports psychology yourself, Liam.
Well, when I got the job, I went to America, and I went out to a friend of mine, Bill Bowen, who was a great friend of mine. He was a dental researcher, one of the world leaders. He was actually decorated in several universities around the world. Poor little Lord of Mercy in his dead sense, and he was such a great friend of me and my family. And my wife got sick, and he was so good on research for my wife, Mary. Ah, look, he was brilliant. But I went out to Bill and I said, right, I'm getting this extra job. And his father is Nicky Rackard's doctor, so he was mad passionate for me to do well as well. So I said, I want to just dive into some, I want to get some sports psychology, and I want to get into that, because I think our guys have a head problem, and I really do want to try and get that. So we did some research in Rochester that time, and we picked up the Sporting Association of Canada was the leading sports association in the world at that particular time. And they were selling documents. Now, you know, Vince Lombardi is winning's not the only thing, it's the only thing, and all that. There's all of this cliche stuff. I didn't want cliches. I wanted academic stuff, because I could study it and see what you could do with it. So I found the Coaching Association of Canada, and I got lots of stuff for them on peak performance and how to perform and all the various absolute total breakdown on sport. And I picked up psychology books from there, and I studied the psychology books myself, but I wasn't qualified. And John O'Connor told me after we won the Ireland and we were in America and all that, I used to give handouts to them that I would actually edit them, and I'd give them handouts on some stuff like that. And John O'Connor told me straight that when he got them at first, he used to throw them in the bin. he showed me the bottom of the gear bag. He might have a glance at it. Now, this fellow has a master's degree, I think. So, like, if I couldn't get him to look at them, I was damn sure some of the rest of them did the same. But by the time it was over, he said he was eating them. And that's it, because it suddenly started to click and make sense. Now, when I went as far as when I was doing the sports psychology side myself, and I was talking about it in the meetings, look, sports psychology is common goddamn sense. So sports psychology is not voodoo-like.
Yeah.
So it's actually common sense, and it's so common it's unbelievable, right? Now, so how do you get a guy to do bits and pieces in the game? And I studied a few guys that had done stuff and won stuff. And I know that in one case, there was a guy called Fox. He won, I think, an Olympic gold or a world gold in single sculling, I think it was. But, like, you know, they wanted to try and his coach, they hold the boat for him, they let him off. And he was saying to him, look, you're going out there, you're worrying all the time. You're worried about the guy. You're worried about the fella. You know, oh my God, he's gone in front of me. Now he's gone behind me. Can I stay in front? And all that's worry. And then he made that point. So he said, I want you to do something different. Concentrate on your technique, okay? Because if that boat, if you miss a stroke in that water by a split second and your concentration drops, that boat's going to waver. And if that boat wavers, these fellas are so good, they're going to beat you. You can only be as good as you can be. So, right, this is it. You go, and this is what I want you to do. And now, when that gun goes and that boat's let go, I want you to say, fast and clean, fast and clean, fast and clean. In other words, get your technique right. Get those oars into the water fast. Get them in clean and make sure you keep doing that. And then you worry about your technique. And if you're not good enough, you won't win. If you're good enough, you might win. So you know that before you go. So we try to develop mantras like that, that during the game that you could keep a concentration. And so that you were apparently concentrating on technique and to try and keep to do the right things. So
well, that's it.
Anyway,
No, but that's it. And that's like, I mean, that's called visualization probably now. That's what the new word has kind of come in.
No, we were using visualization big time at that stage. Yeah. We were doing visualization in the field without them knowing. For example, if I'm reffing a ball, I'd have 10 or 11 balls in my pocket or whatever. And if I blew a whistle there and sort of dropped the ball beside me and said, the result of what we've done there means that ball is coming down to where I am, right? And I stand now and I'd be within 5 yards of that ball, okay? So let's see how it happens. So that's making them visualize because they can see it then on the field. There's no point in just giving them a lecture without giving it, so showing how it works. So from our perspective, we got through the league and we got a few monkeys off our backs. We got promotion to the league in 96. I went through a rough passage in the end of 95 because I was trying to suss them out. But anyway, so I went and I just made the point. Look, lads, I've done sports psychology for the last year or whatever. Now, I'm putting a proposal to you. I don't know enough about sports psychology to call him an expert, but what about bringing in an expert? And Tom Dempsey, I think, piped up. He said, oh, Jesus, that's a great idea, Liam, because we had a good Liam kind of relationship. We weren't daddy and master at school. I encouraged everyone to make their comments on anything they wanted to say. I didn't mind what they said to me. But anyway, so we'll be all over the Daily Star or whatever with Wexford Hire Hedge Rink. I said, okay, that's fine. And then I said, right, we've got the panel in here now. So who here is going to go out and tell their sister, their brother, their mother? Because if you want to do that, lads, you know, we're really not at the races. We're not mature enough to handle this. Like, so if you can't handle it, only the people in this room should know. Nobody outside this room should know. And the first one who breaks it is going to ruin us. So if you want to ruin us, go out and tell your mother. Go and tell your sister. You won't believe what Wexford are doing. And that's what will happen, okay? So we're going to debate it. So I said, okay, we'll debate it then. And we said, right, okay. Then someone piped up and said, listen, if it only got us 1%, what's wrong with it, right? Okay, so we got on to the discussion. So my point was, if it's not unanimous, it's not going to happen, okay? It has to be unanimous now because Tom made a good point and we need everyone to be buy-in. So putting your hand up means you buy in. If you're not putting your hand up, be fair, keep it down. And if the hands don't go up, we're not doing it, okay? That's it. So it's up to you. So we gave them enough time to get them to talk. And then after a while, we said, right, that's it, over, or whatever. And they said, oh, no, we want more time. Anyway, I interviewed three different people. I interviewed Niamh Fitzpatrick, and Niamh was fantastic. And another fellow was very good, but he kept telling me he had some great ideas for hurling. I didn't want them to have any ideas for hurling. I want them to singular focus, lead me do the hurling, not because I'm arrogant or because I felt that we can't have mixed messages with everybody talking about it. Everyone has to have their own job, stick with your job, stay with the job, and that's it. So I interviewed Niamh and she was fantastic. And we got onto a level and I thought, this is good. It's a female. that'll make bring a different mindset into the group, right? So we're all in Ferry Carrick Hotel. We're all waiting for me to bring down this psychologist, and I never told him who it was. And I walked her down, and they all agreed, and we didn't unanimously agree. So I walked her in, and I said, "Bro, I think we've got a great headline in the paper. Wexford hire woman head shrink, sort of help them try and win a match and have won nothing for 40 years, lad." So that's not, so, you know, so we had it unanimously. And to be fair, that never came out, and, you know, everyone kept it quiet because it wasn't in our best interest to try and undermine ourselves by telling it. So the lads were brilliant, and we stayed together. Now, Martin was worried about this. Martin said, "Fellas, we're not going to make the 25, Mike." I said, "Martin, look at him. I'm telling you now, straight. I either or I don't. I've never experienced there, and we're not doing that. Everybody is going to be told, not just a select group, because that's elitism. We're not doing that. These guys are here on merit, and that's it. Because if you drop dead in the morning, one of these guys are going to replace you. So that's it. So let's trust everybody." So we did, and we got on with it. Now we've reservations and worry and all sorts, but I think the lads were just brilliant. Anyway, they were brilliant. We had a great group by now. We had one hell of a group by then. Like, I think we'd have won the World Cup. You know, that's the fact, because we had fellas so tuned in. You know, that, and they were so together on it now. And these fellas had lived a very tough life on the hurling fields. So they suddenly saw some light at the end of the tunnel. And we tried a few plan things that worked for us, and they got more belief in me then as well. I know they did, because we worked moves and things that actually we could make them work. And, you know, so it started to work. But look, it's still back to the team. They were good enough, and they embraced it, and they did it themselves. And that's the truth. And I should look in the mirror every day, and I know what the truth is.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, I have to say, like, anybody going to watch the show tonight, Liam Dunn almost sheds a tear talking about one of your, how tight you were as a group, and you were walking around, you were punching their chest before the All-Ireland final, and you went to Tommy Keogh, who had been bullied in the league against Limerick, and you made a speech, you gave him a kiss on the cheek. And Liam Dunn's telling this, Liam, and he breaks down actually telling it. That'll tell you. I almost believe you when you say you would have won the World Cup the way, if all been making Liam Dunn cry 25 years later.
Yeah, a few fellas in Mark were crying too, I think. but Liam Dunn was a great hurler, and there's a lot of people said, "Oh, he was dirty" and things like that on occasions. Liam Dunn got a lot of I saw Liam Dunn getting some desperate hardship, right? Or really rotten things happened to him, but he had to hold his discipline, because I played with a great player in the club, a fella called Jimmy Cullinan. And Jimmy Cullinan was the best centre man. Himself and Liam Dunn, and Joe Dollard actually was a great centre back for a small man in Laois as well. I always admired him. He was a great little bit of stuff. Now, they were small men, but they were the best small men I saw playing centre back. I saw small men like Coughlins of Offaly as well playing wing backs and things. Yeah. And their man Kelly from Galway was a great wing back. But the boys were three small men playing centre back, and everybody put a great big fella on. And then they start crying when the big fella couldn't beat him up, like. You know, and it wasn't about that. John Power and Liam Dunn used to nearly kill each other playing hurling, but there was never hardly a dirty stroke. But by Christ, were they letting it go first time. But Liam was absolutely, he was really on message for discipline. And Gary Carvey's finger, his little finger, was broken in the final. And you know, people maintained to me that I'd set up this to happen. I certainly did not. And I never, ever, ever told anybody in a dressing room ever in my life to foul, because I believe that's the last bastion of the crook. You either win this goddamn thing fair. I walked out of Croke Park that day with my head held high, because we played the game as it should have been played. That's as far as I was concerned. And I didn't want to be over any team that wouldn't do that. I hit gobshies, because I got marked by too many of them. Fellas that give you a hand at the hurling, the balls, or whatever they do with the leg with you. And they thought that they were great fellas. Like, you would, just because you were going for the ball, because you wouldn't surrender a single ball for the sake of getting a blow. But they were evil whores. So I just think that, you know, I never wanted to have any part of that on the team that I was over. And I never did. Never, ever, even at club level. Never.
Come here, one question before I let you go that I wanted to ask you was, I'll never forget this from watching the match live myself, but then Cyril Farrell said it in analysis maybe 10 years later, is how ye walked out onto the field that day. Like, Martin Story looked like he was just walking up to the shop, leading out the team, and the team, and Limerick stormed out and, you know, did the Munster thing and everything. And what was the thinking behind that?
Well, I was thinking my way through this. How can I get them to do something that's a bit different? Okay, so I think there's prayer around the pitch. when I was, I see the player on the pitch now, fellas handing water to each other, which is fair enough, and I see him having chats going around the field, one fella pull up beside another. I think it's the most marvellous kind of thing. There was a time I felt it wasn't cool myself. I thought maybe soccer lads coming out through the tunnel and I might be cooler when I was a bit younger. But now I just value the parade around the pitch. I think it's a fabulous thing to do, right? Anyway, so we said, right, we had a meeting and said, right, what do you think of the parade around the pitch, lads, and the warm-up and all that? Oh, geez, a lot of bullshit. Going on, you're half an hour waiting to get out there. I said, okay. So I'll tell you what then, we won't do that, okay? We're not going to go out. What do you mean? I said, we're just not going to go out. Why should we go out if it's not going to be in our best interest? We'll go out when it's ready for us, and we won't do any taking part in some of this stuff. We just go out and do it, right? Now, we wouldn't say we wouldn't do the parade around the pitch. So someone said, sure, okay. And someone said, yeah. And then I said, because that's a kind of a juvenile thing to say. That was never going to happen. So then someone said, sure, we can't do that. I said, right. Well, then how about this then? And I'm not saying this to be nasty to Limerick. I said, they will not walk the full round of the pitch. I'm giving you this carry. I'm telling you right now, they will not walk the full round of the pitch. Because the way they are geared up, the way we had it down in Limerick, and we had a bad game down there, they are going to try and set the pace. They are going to try and lay down. This is a subliminal stuff thing. Now, what we're going to do, I would suggest, is we walk the full round of that pitch. Okay? We walk to the last step. Everybody, with our heads held high. And if they break, don't even look at them. I'm making a suggestion to you. And then when we're going to meet the president, why can't we stand like soldiers? We're going to war in a match. Not that it's war, dirty war. It's a legitimate war. Why can't we stand like soldiers in there? Why can't we stand with our chests out and our heads held high? Because we might never be back here again. And as a group, we you know, the odds are we might never get back. And I knew I was gone anyway, so we're never going to have, I wasn't going to be back there anyway. So I said, why can't we do that? Why can't we do that and embrace it and go out there? And it was Niamh's suggestion. I got credit for it. It wasn't me. Niamh said, I said to Niamh, I want to do this. I said, I need him to stay. What do you think I should do? She said, put the traffic light system on him. Tell him it's red first. It's on red. Then, you know, then it goes whatever, amber, and then it's green. And you don't just start firing yourself up until the green light comes on. So that was a kind of visualization as well. So they did stand like soldiers. They stood like those men. And I'm absolutely so proud of the way they stood up. And I know I'm not making little of any other team, but Limerick were leaping up and down and Mayo doing. And then psychologically we took over because we were saying, well, okay, we can do that. And I'm sure that fazed them a little bit that we were able to do that. Mind you, they got 4 points in about the first 4 minutes. So it didn't faze them too much. But anyway.
That was always the thing. Like, I mean, which approach was right? Because they got the good start, but then ye got the good finish. So, like, I mean, you know, it's hard.
I'll tell you, we said that too. If you come up all full up and steam, you know what? You can run out of energy very quick when you start really flying for a start. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you get caught and you start to settle. And when you get into that groove of not being able to be up on top of it, you played, and I played games where no matter what you did, the team couldn't get up. They just couldn't get up to the pitch that they needed to be up to. So we needed to concentrate on getting ourselves right and that the pitch would come. And I think that's what happened. But from our perspective, like, it was better that we went in like organised and in control and everyone knowing everyone's in control. And then it's very important for the players to know the lads on the line are in control. They know what they're doing. I don't need to start fretting what's happening going to happen here. Because we had a system as well where we said, if your man moves, you move with him. Do not look near me. Don't go near me. Just move. If someone has moved off you and you go to the wing forward, and Johnny Dooley has moved off Shawnee Flood had been hooking him like holy hell, and Johnny was getting a bit frustrated with him, I'd say, and I wouldn't blame him because Shawnee was frustrated the nation with his hooking. He was brilliant. So Eamon Cregan switched him to the far wing and Shawnee just trotted after him. So what happens now? Johnny Dooley winds up on the far wing saying, Jesus, he's with me still, you know.
Yeah.
So everybody moved after the man, and I said, we will decide when you go back to your own position. Stay where you are, keep hurling, don't drop your guard, keep attacking the ball, stay in your position, and then we'll call you back and put you back in your own place. Which meant that you might be full back, and Jer Cush was right half back in the All-Ireland semi-final against Galway, passed the ball to Adrian Fenlon, put it into the square, Billy Byrne flicked it into the back of the net. And that was Jer Cush right half back. Now, he was full back. Now, his man moved out, so he followed him. So that brought him out and into the play. So, like, you know, this thing of fellas having the selectors then, hey, Johnny, come back, come here, you go over there in that far corner, and you... And there's a whole meeting going on. In a game of 100, 100 miles an hour, you could lose an All-Ireland over that. And the point we could use was that didn't Limerick lose an All-Ireland themselves with that, to Offaly, you know, with the last minute goal. The whole thing fell apart in the last few minutes. So don't let that happen to us. So don't be worrying, and we give them reasons not to worry on the field of play. That was kind of what we were trying to do. But this is from sitting down. I used to walk the beach outside from my own home here. And I just walk the beach thinking, get up at 5 in the morning, walk along the beach and go through again from start to finish. Go through it again from start to finish. Go home back and write down a few notes on it. Then go back through it backwards. You know what I mean? But that's what it took for us to do it. We were not Kilkenny. We were not Galway. We weren't Cork. We were none of those people. So we knew who we were. And that makes it all the better, because you can get a better tune out of the fiddle when you know what you have to play.
Yeah. Yeah, just the parade thing for me was impressive, because the temptation is to break when the other team breaks, and Limerick had got their boost from going in front of the canal, in front of their fans, and then they walked up the Cusick and they broke at the halfway line, and your fans are on Hill 16. So it was very good to have thought about that and got your moment with the fans on Hill 16. They would have got a psychological marker had you broke away there and missed what they had. You know, all this probably thing goes on, like you things.
We were never going to break away anywhere. Didn't make any difference. But our fans went berserk when we didn't break and the Limerick fellas broke.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that sent the stadium. And I had good friends in Limerick as well. And they said, oh, Jesus Christ. When that happened, I said, a friend of mine, I played with him actually, but he was in college with me. And he said, so not very flattering. He says, the other little fucker, he's after coming up with something again on this one. Because he knew that I might have been thinking like that. You know, because he played with me. So, look, that's not masterstroke. It's not a masterstroke, but it's managing the day. We needed to manage that day.
Yes, the details.
Manage it right. The detail. But, like, why would we not march around the field? Well, and my point to the boys in the meeting was, lads, we are playing in an All-Ireland final. Like, you know, we're playing an All-Ireland final. Can you believe we're playing an All-Ireland final? Why wouldn't we want to do everything the right way? Why don't we want to walk? That's not good enough to win the cup. Win it the right way. Win it the right way. Do everything the right way. And if that's our line for the day, then we do it. And we'll be prouder. And we'll live this for 25 years from now. I remember saying that to them. We will remember this day. And we will remember that we did our county proud. And we'll do our little best. And if failure is the end of it, we will have failed trying to do the right thing. And that's what we need to do. And then we can be proud of ourselves. Because that's the heritage you come from. Because that Wexford team of the 50s were absolutely fantastic fellas. They would give a great example. They were sporting men. They were great men. Don't forget, we're the only people in the world that carried an opponent after we won in our first All-Ireland against a massive team, and we cheered Christy Ring off the field. That's what Wexford fellas did, and that was something fantastic to do, right? So that's where you come from. That's who we are. So let's go out and be the real Wexford, and that's it. So, like, and I meant that. I'm not bullshitting here now. I meant that. That's who we were. That was our heritage. Pick up the flag and move on with it. Put it on top of the mountain and go home.
You nearly have me. I'm never a hurler, Liam. You nearly have me searching for the hurl in the house here that I use for protection if anyone breaks in and get a slitter and poking around. I say, come here. Well, just last question here. We know you had to finish up, obviously, after the 96 All Ireland win. Your wife got sick, your wife Mary, and you walked away. Do you think you would have won another All Ireland had you stayed on?
I can never tell that. But what I would say is this: that, like, Rory stayed on, Seamus wouldn't go. When I was going, Seamus wouldn't stay. And it's a pity Seamus wouldn't have stayed as well. But it broke up the management team a little bit. And so, like, I suppose that was going to have its ramifications. But we'd won Leinster the following year as well. Yeah. And it could have beaten Tipperary as well. But I would have loved to have had a go with Clare. I really would, because, I had played for Clare, and I would have loved to play Clare and get to an Ireland final to play Clare. They'd won in 95, we won in 96. And I think, like, Clare were a great inspiration to me, by the way. They were a great inspiration to me. Great inspiration to me. And Loughnan, that team was a better, great, great, great motivator for me as well. And I looked at that team, and I put their names down, and I picked the Wexford team and put them on them. And I started looking at the teams, and I thought, we're every bit as good as those guys. We are every bit as good as those guys. Jeez, I'd love to have a crack at Clare. And, like, I felt I couldn't lose it was something like you had a foot in both camps. But from our perspective, like, I think if we could have got Clare, it would have been a great spectacle. I can't say we would have won, but I'd love to have been managing the team that would have got to an Ireland final against Clare.
It would have been psychological warfare with yourself and Loughnan.
Well, it's locked down, probably give me a box and I'm out.
I'd like to see the tricks the two of you would have gotten up to, because he would have been a lot into that kind of, you know, let's lay down a marker here, another marker there, you know, and thought about stuff probably similar to you at the time.
Yeah, but as well as that, then, like, we had a plan for every eventuality. Like, so if he laid down a marker, we'd have been we probably would have had to match fire with fire, but I wouldn't have come to that. So it never happened anyway, but it would have been great.
Liam, come here. I've taken up enough of your time. I know you have to go. Thanks very much for taking the call. And the Lake Regale is on tonight, 9:30, and it's not to be missed. Thanks very much, Liam.
Okay, Colin, thank you.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go on, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.